Welcome to Radio Who, What, Why. I'm Jeff Shackman. Sarah Kendzior is one of those people who helps us make sense of the world. Her coverage of the 2016 election helped us to understand it, even if we didn't like the outcome. She's a leading authority on authoritarian states, particularly in Central Asia and the former Soviet Union. She has a PhD in anthropology, an MA in Central Eurasian Studies, and her book, The View of Flyover Country, is a must-read for anyone hoping to understand the country today. In fact, the book is going to be re-released this April. One of the other issues that Sarah has been looking at, both as it relates to the behavior of authoritarian states and despotic leaders, are elections and voter suppression. Unfortunately, we're rapidly potentially becoming a textbook case for some of those behaviors. It is my pleasure to be joined once again by Sarah Kendzior. Sarah, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You know, there are so many issues that you're talking about, so many things that we're looking at today with respect to what's going on in the country, what's going on with respect to this administration. There's almost a sense at some point of just throwing up your hands because one is so overwhelmed by it all. Talk a little bit first about how you process this and how you decide what it is that on any given day that concerns you and that you want to look at.
I mean, to some degree, it's not up to me. Sort of have to respond to what comes out there. But I think at this point, a year into the Trump administration, you can gain a sense of, you know, what stories have kind of a broader structural importance and what are kind of, you know, gossipy, reactionary pieces, you know, Oprah running for president or not in 2020, you know, as an example of something I don't think we need to be prioritizing. Michael Wolff's book is a kind of in-between thing where it does have actual political ramifications that is, you know, mostly a kind of gossipy thing, but I think something like, voter suppression, attacks on our electoral system, attacks on the judiciary, the Russia investigation, these are all long-term problems that will set the course, for what we're able to talk about in the future and what kind of choices and opportunities Americans have.
And with respect to that, certainly the one thing that can arguably move us beyond all this is elections. And this whole issue of voter suppression becomes even more critical. In fact, I think you said somewhere that you think it's going to be one of the most important issues in 2018.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. With the midterms coming up, you know, it's the crucial issue because a lot of Trump's future and the future of the GOP and the future of America hangs on this election. And that's because, there's a chance that the Democrats may be able to retake the Senate, maybe, at least make some inroads on the House and go forward with the articles of impeachment that have already been filed. And there are a bunch of those on emoluments, on high crimes and misdemeanors. I think the reaction to the Mueller probe will be determined somewhat by the makeup of who is in office. I think it's possible we'll see results of that probe, and certainly, more indictments and more action throughout the year. And so this is a big deal because what we've seen with the Republican Party over the last year is a complete unwillingness to acknowledge the evidence in front of them. Instead, they've gone the path of trying to obstruct the investigation. They're obsequious lackeys to Trump in a way that is very reminiscent of how people behave in authoritarian states. It goes beyond opportunism. It's really something that reminds me of when people are being threatened, when they're being blackmailed. You know, somebody like Lindsey Graham is a good example of a person who did a real 180. And so I don't think that, the Republicans on the whole can be trusted. And it's not a matter of me disagreeing with their policies, though I often do in terms of stuff like the tax bill quite strongly. It's a matter of our sovereignty and our national security and their deference to Trump, their fear of Trump. And on that note, Trump's deference to Russia, all that is a big problem. And elections will not completely fix this problem, but they do provide an opportunity to kind of change the political landscape in which the problem is analyzed.
What do you sense that people are afraid of with respect to Trump? I mean, afraid of from somebody with a 38% approval rating?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that's very interesting is, you would think that would give them some leeway, especially given that Trump has personally attacked a lot of these people, a lot of these Republicans in a very vicious way. And also Trump is ignorant of policies, like he's some sort of a leader who inspires people to, you know, think about issues and who comes forward with great ideas. I mean, he really has nothing to positive to offer the country or the party. And so I think they're afraid of, you know, possible blackmail or threats. And I say this because that is how Trump has operated for his entire career, going all the way back to the 1980s. He surrounded himself with, you know, ruthless people, ranging from mobsters to lawyers, like Roy Cohn, for example, or Michael Cohen in the last election cycle, who would threaten anybody who would expose something, you know, dangerous and negative about Trump, or who even opposed him. You know, Roger Stone is another example of somebody who has, you know, no shame and who doesn't play by any kind of normal political rules. Like, we really have, you know, a new situation here. And so my guess is that that is going on. I think at the same time, you find Republicans that see a chaotic situation and they want to take advantage of it and try to, you know, pass through policies and initiatives that maybe normally wouldn't fly because they know that Trump doesn't understand them. They know that, you know, he may not strike them down. But, you know, the situation worries me because I don't think it's as simple as just the kind of careerism that we've seen. I mean, on that note, we have a record number now of Republicans who are going to resign, who, you know, are going to retire or not run again in 2018. And I think that that's indicative of a political landscape that's become so dangerous that they just want to get themselves out.
And as it relates to elections in 2018, what do you make of what's been going on most recently with respect to the seeming shutdown of the president's voter fraud commission?
Yeah, you know, I was concerned when that commission was formed. I thought it was kind of putting something we'd suspected into clear view, which is that they want to view the votes of certain groups of Americans as illegitimate, you know, namely immigrants, especially Hispanic immigrants, you know, that may be crucial in a state like Florida or even in Texas. You know, they basically want to disenfranchise people. And that's what, you know, COAX has done. You know, that's what others in the Trump administration have rallied for. I'm glad that the commission to do that apparently is gone, but I kind of wonder, you know, is it really, or are we going to just see a similar initiative emerge under a new name? You know, it came under quite a bit of criticism. And so I think maybe they realized that they can't be so upfront about what they're doing, that the old ways of, you know, voter suppression, you know, guised as, you know, something else, you know, kind of doing it, you know, more subtly, might be more effective. For a while, it seemed like they really wanted to flaunt their power. And perhaps as Trump's approval ratings diminished, perhaps as the federal probe tightens, you know, they realized that might not be the best strategy right now.
Of course, we're also seeing statewide efforts at voter suppression. We saw a lot of this in Alabama in the recent special election. And there are states like Wisconsin and others and North Carolina where there have been substantial efforts at voter suppression.
Yeah, I mean, North Carolina is now no longer considered a democracy, you know, according to groups that measure things like voting rights. And basically, since the partial repeal of the VRA in 2013, we've seen a number of repressive voter ID laws come into play. And those laws were critical in determining the outcome of the 2016 election. You know, in Wisconsin, there were, I think, 200,000 people that were disenfranchised as a result of that new law, which had never been in play for a previous presidential election. And Trump won Wisconsin by only 20,000 votes. And so I think that, you know, voter suppression through ID laws played a big role. You know, I think also, of course, gerrymandering, which has been a problem for a very long time, played a role. And, you know, I don't want to rule out the fact that we know Russia hacked voter databases. You know, there's been all this insistence that, you know, no foreign state or no hackers, you know, altered the actual vote totals. But, you know, I find that a little bit hard to just take on faith without a forensic investigation, given that we know they tried very hard to swing this election for Donald Trump. And we know that they've hacked so many other, you know, government entities, including the State Department, the DOD, you know, obviously the RNC, the DNC, people's personal emails, Yahoo, you know, I could go on and on and on. And we know they hacked the voter databases, and we don't know what they did with that information. They might not have changed the votes afterwards, but that could have potentially contributed to the disenfranchisement, to people being turned away at the polls for various reasons. And it hasn't really been thoroughly investigated. Even, you know, we're, God, I don't know, 14 months after the election. And, you know, that's a concern to me. No one's remedying this problem.
What is your experience in looking at other authoritarian states tell you about what we still might expect in terms of these behaviors with respect to voter suppression here?
Well, when you look at other authoritarian states, I mean, I think you have to look at the long-term history. And there are some states, you know, that have particular expertise in, like Uzbekistan, that have never been a democracy, that have never had free elections, whether under the Soviet Union or independently. And sort of, you know, the existing system and the set of expectations among citizens is very different than what we have. I think it's more useful to look at a place like Poland or Hungary that, you know, did become democratic, you know, once the Soviet Union collapsed and, you know, once it basically re-embraced democracy in the 1990s, and has really changed over the last couple of years. You know, in Poland, you see this with the loss of an independent judiciary. You know, in both countries, you see attacks on the free press and on other pillars of democracy. And, you know, the governments are structured differently. You know, our electoral college is sort of easier to manipulate. It poses its own set of problems. But generally what you're seeing is a kind of flagrant rejection of democratic norms in all of these cases. You see, you know, people behaving less like representatives and more like kings, and that becoming more and more acceptable, and the opposition to it getting more and more firmly stamped out and unable to hold, you know, leverage or power in order to stop it from getting worse. And that's what I worry about. And so I see the 2018 elections as an opportunity, not necessarily to stop this entirely, because I think it's too big a problem, but to slow it down, to slow our progression, you know, towards autocracy, which is where I felt we've been going since Trump has been elected.
Mm-hmm. What is it that individuals can do or be hyper aware of with respect to some of these voter suppression issues?
Well, I think, you know, the best course is to look at it state by state, you know, district by district, you know, because each state has different rules, and some states are better about this than others. There's also the fact that a lot of these laws about voter ID are new. You know, they were passed after 2013, and some of them will be enacted for the first time in 2018. So you should look up your state. You should find out what the requirements are for voting. And I think, you know, most states have some kind of group that addresses voter rights issues, you know, whether an organization like Indivisible or, you know, Jason Kander, who ran for senator in my state in Missouri, has let America Vote, you know, which I think provides information about, you know, how to help people get to the polls, how to help people be aware of, you know, laws that may prohibit them from voting. You know, and at the same time, I think we need to look out for voter intimidation at the polls. You know, I would imagine that the ACLU and other organizations are going to be looking for that. And, you know, I think yesterday I saw a tweet, I'm not sure it was followed up on with an article, basically saying that a law had been struck down that had basically protected people from voter intimidation efforts since, you know, about 1980 or something like that. I don't think it was struck down. I think it was allowed to just, you know, it wasn't renewed. And so that presents another problem in that it might be harder to contest intimidation efforts, you know, whether legally or in person or what.
Of course, there's reason to take some hope away from Alabama, where there clearly was some efforts at voter suppression, closing DMV offices, moving them around, etc. And still, Doug Jones was victorious.
Yeah, I mean, the turnout was massive. We know that people were turned away. You know, there are plenty of complaints about that and a lot of documentation. Yet, Doug Jones, you know, he managed to win in Alabama, you know, which, of course, we know is extremely unusual for a Democrat. And, you know, we've also seen similarly large turnout and surprising wins in places like Virginia. And so I think the Democrats really have a good shot. You know, and a lot of that just has to do with people seeing how out of control the Trump administration is. And even if they're not you know, super thrilled or excited about the Democrats, they realize that, you know, this is the most sensible route to keep Trump from gaining power and to stop this flow of corruption. And so I do think turnout will be high. I think a lot of people became more aware of rights that they had as those rights began to be threatened, as they began to lose them. I think, you know, the electorate is mobilized. It's unfortunate that mobilization stems in many ways from fear, but it's better than being, you know, ignorant of our rights and our laws. And, you know, I think this was a wake-up call for Americans, and I think part of that wake-up call is the realization that, you know, they need to vote, and also that they should be, you know, good citizens and help others vote, that everyone has this right. It's not applied equally, it never has been. And so it's important to protect the rights of people who want to vote, but who are, you know, historically disenfranchised or turned away.
And talk a little bit about what you've seen going on not too far away from you in Ohio with the purging of voter rolls there.
You know, I've seen that in Ohio and in other states, and I think it speaks to a broader issue of, you know, a lack of transparency in the government. I think sometimes people think of voter suppression as this sort of, you know, simple to document phenomenon where, you know, you show up and you vote and then your vote's not counted, but there are so many different ways of doing it, and purging the rolls, attacking the database or the rolls itself is one way to go.
What is your sense, finally, of how this whole discussion about Russia and hacking the election and how that will roll into, you touched on this a little while ago, how this is going to roll into this whole concern about voter suppression as we go forward in 2018?
I mean, I'm very concerned about it. You know, right before Obama left office, he signed a piece of legislation that said that elections were part of our critical infrastructure, you know, no different than any other, you know, physical, tangible part of infrastructure. And Trump recently, you know, or the administration, put out, you know, a kind of a document about threats to infrastructure, about the threats of hacking and so forth, and did not consider elections to fall under that rubric anymore. They're basically just rejecting Obama's legislation. And I think that's because, of course, they know that it's advantageous for them, for Russia, to interfere with elections on their behalf. I think they see this as, you know, something advantageous. And I find it really appalling that they don't consider the basic principles of sovereignty and national security and the damage that this can do, you know, in our election system. And I think we should expect, you know, hacks or attempted hacks in 2018 because there's been, you know, no concerted plan to thwart them.
Sarah Kendzior, I thank you so much for spending time with us here on Radio Who, What, Why.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for listening and for joining us here on Radio Who, What, Why. I hope you join us next week for another Radio Who, What, Why podcast. I'm Jeff Shekman. If you like this podcast, please feel free to share and help others find it by rating and reviewing it on iTunes. You can also support this podcast and all the work we do by going to whowhatwhy.org/donate.